The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Gary Parrish, welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. The Eye on College Basketball podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. Kyle Boone is here with me.
That's strong jaw.
If you watch it on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget, if you haven't already done it, please, while you're here, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Okay, let's get into it. Awesome game tonight between Houston and Texas A&M. I promise we'll get to it, but I do want to start in the ACC because Sunday was another great day for the Atlantic Coast Conference. One day after North Carolina and NC State both punched tickets to the Sweet 16. Duke and Clemson did the same. Final score, Duke 93, James Madison 55. Blowout. Final score, Clemson 72, Baylor 64. Upset. So after the ACC was limited to just five bids in the 2024 NCAA tournament, the ACC now has four schools in the Sweet 16. KB, does this validate the ACC fans and coaches who were screaming the league was vastly underrated all season long? Does this validate the point they were making? Or is what we're watching just the nature of the NCAA tournament, nothing more, nothing less?
I would go with neither. I don't feel like it validates the ACC. It was pretty clear throughout the season that the top of the ACC was head and shoulders above everyone else, and the rest of the ACC was just what it was. It's kind of like the Shaq meme, right? Like, I owe you an apology. I wasn't familiar with your game, Duke. I wasn't familiar with your game, North Carolina. This was really good showing for the ACC. 8-1 now in the NCAA tournament. Of course, if you include Virginia in the first four. I think it's impressive for the ACC. I still wouldn't probably make a case that, you know, Pitt or Wake should have been included in the NCAA tournament. I think their resume suggested probably otherwise. But the top of the ACC we thought was good, and the top of the ACC so far in the NCAA tournament has indeed been good.
Right. Carolina and Duke are exactly where they were supposed to be. Clemson, obviously a surprise. NC State, undeniably a surprise. Virginia got its brains beat out in the first four. And if we're, you know, using this as a a launching pad to debate and discuss the ACC again, we're really only talking about Pitt. No other ACC school had an actual chance to get into the NCAA tournament by the time we reached Selection Sunday. Wake Forest was there with about, a week or two to go, but they fell apart at the end. So there's only one school that we're talking about here. It's Pitt. Yep. And so it comes down to, should the ACC have been a five-bid league or a six-bid league? Any conversation past that is a conversation that loses all context based on where we were on Selection Sunday. And I know ACC fans don't want to hear this, but I promise when you're on the other side of this thing, like when you get a bunch of teams in and then it doesn't go so well, I'm not going to come back someday and then say you shouldn't have got those teams in. I fundamentally, like at my core, do not believe that anything that happens after Selection Sunday has anything to do with what we were talking about on Selection Sunday. So if you want to make an argument as an ACC fan that this proves the league was tougher than it was, than it was believed to be, and that if you graded on that curve, that Pitt belonged just on the right side of the bubble instead of just on the wrong side of the bubble, like whatever, you might be right. But the idea, how about this? If you're not willing to tell me that when a middle of the pack Mountain West team beat the third place ACC team by 20 billion the other night, if you're not willing to tell me that means something in a conversation about the Mountain West and the ACC, then I don't have much interest in having a conversation about what it means when, the second place team in the ACC, handles or when the first place team in the Big Ten handles the first place team in the Mountain West by a billion points. Right. I think the NCAA, I guess I'd bottom line it this way. What is more likely, that a 4-month season that we play before the NCAA tournament is a good indication of like who's good and who's not, or a 40-minute game, played on a Sunday or a Saturday is a good indication of who's good and who's not? In other words, not last week, the week before, the month before, was anybody saying Clemson's better than Baylor?
Absolutely not. No.
Nobody ever said that at any point this season. But then they played in the NCAA tournament and Clemson won. Congratulations. But I don't think it changes the entire story connected to that league or any other league.
Right. Yes, agreed. Not everything has to be a referendum on the league. Yeah, the Mountain West got six teams into the NCAA tournament. And they struggled in the NCAA tournament so far, save for, obviously, San Diego State. But that doesn't mean that the Mountain West didn't have a strong conference. That doesn't mean that, Utah State was not worthy of being seated where they were. I agree with you. Not everything has to be a referendum just based off of what can happen in an NCAA tournament game.
Yeah, because what has happened to the Mountain West in this tournament has happened to the Mountain West in this tournament. I've got a Twitter account. And people know what it is. And so they'll just send you notes every once in a while. And I get a lot of them about the Mountain West. And one of them that has come, I've just seen it multiple times. It's like, all I heard all year long was you talking about how the Mountain West deserved six bids to the NCAA tournament. Now what do you have to say? Same thing. The Mountain West did deserve six bids to the NCAA tournament. That's why the Mountain West got six bids to the NCAA tournament. And whatever happened after the NCAA tournament started is just stuff that happened after the NCAA tournament started. Yeah. So I think you and I are in agreement here. The ACC is performing brilliantly, and it should be applauded. And I assume that if I were an ACC coach or fan, I'd be trying to make these larger points as well, I guess. But I don't accept them. And every league at some point, if we live long enough, is going to be on both sides of this conversation. Either you got a bunch and you didn't look like you deserved it when the tournament started, or you didn't get that many and it looked like you deserve more once the tournament started. Every league will be on both sides of this, and I'll do my best forever to try to stay consistent with the way I discuss it. And so that's what I'll do with the ACC. If we're looking ahead, though, the ACC matchups in the Sweet 16, it's going to be North Carolina against Alabama, Duke against Houston, Clemson against Arizona, NC State against Marquette. So Carolina will be favored in its game. The other three ACC schools will be underdogs. But still, to have 25% of the Sweet 16, no matter what you think about the ACC as a league during the season, it was, by the way, the fourth best league according to the net, fifth best league according to KenPom. No matter what you thought about that league during the season, we can all agree having 25% of the Sweet 16 is awesome. Congratulations to the ACC. Let's whip around the rest of the bracket. We'll do that next. We'll start in the Midwest region, but first, a word from our partners.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Strong Jaw, let's move to the Midwest region where we only had one game on Sunday. It involved a number one seed. It was Purdue. Final score, we touched on it already, 106-67, Purdue over Utah State. Just an absolute blowout. And poor Danny Sprinkle, I don't know if you saw the locker room footage from before the game, but he's talking to his team and it's like he wanted to have a Fairleigh Dickinson moment in the pregame locker room scene. And he said, this is not going to be our last game. And as I was watching it live, I was like, oh man, he's probably going to wish that wasn't on tape. He's probably going to wish that one wasn't on tape. Purdue just went out and absolutely destroyed him. Zach Edey got 23 points, 14 rebounds, 3 blocks. He's now averaging in the NCAA tournament 26.5 points, 17.5 rebounds, 3 blocks in 29 minutes per game. He is the first player with 3 straight NCAA tournament games of at least 20 points and 3 blocks since Shaquille O'Neal at LSU in the early 1990s. Purdue in this game shot 55% from the field. They only missed 30 shots in the whole game. They grabbed 13 offensive rebounds. That's an offensive rebounding percentage of 43.3%. If that were their season average, it would lead the nation. Something I made the point on CBS Sports Network, and I'm not trying to like make a big deal out of this because it's over and they got blasted and whatever. But if Utah State would have been properly seeded, because I don't believe that they were, then you don't have to play a one seed in the round of 32. And this whole thing could look different. As it is, Utah State had to play a one seed. They did not play them well. What'd you make of Zach Edey's latest overwhelming performance? And Purdue, at least getting past these two first games, avoiding the upset to a mid-major thing like that all like went out the window, because now going forward, they can't be upset by a mid-major. It's nothing but strong teams joining them in Detroit. What'd you think of what you saw from Purdue today?
Yeah, super impressive. I think when we were previewing this game, we thought, Utah State, the way they played in the first round, the way they've played this season in a really deep conference that, maybe they would have a chance. I think you actually asked me, does Utah State have a chance? And I laughed and said no, just because what we saw from Purdue in their first round, it's like, wow, they kind of killed Grambling State. It wasn't close. And obviously, it's Grambling State. You would expect that. But just the way they played really throughout this entire season, kind of expected this might be the case. And it was the case. Edey dominated, 23 points, finished with 14 rebounds. This Purdue team shot the ball really well. They made 11 three-pointers. That was pretty jarring, considering, if the last time you watched this Purdue team was the last time they lost in the NCAA tournament, which was last year to Fairleigh Dickinson, and you watch that team and you watch this team and you compare the two, night and day difference. The way they shoot it from outside, the pieces that they have around Zach Edey are so much better It's why they're a national championship contender, obviously, and it's why they blew out a really good Utah State team today.
Yeah, I don't know if Purdue will win the national title. I do not know if Purdue's the best team in the country. I've said this for months. What I do know is that they're good enough to win the national title, and they are one of the best teams in the country and possibly the best. There are moments where UConn looks like it could overwhelm anybody. There are moments where Houston looks like it's just impossible to deal with and score on. But there are also moments where Purdue looks like, woo, buddy, I don't know how you beat them. And you're exactly right. So often it's just – it's so dumb. Like, I've almost gotten to the point where I can just ignore it. But so often people think of Purdue and they go back to March 2023 without recognizing we're now in March 2024. What coaches and other people in the sport will consistently tell you is that the biggest, you know, place for improvement among relevant college basketball players is from, you know, freshman year to sophomore year. To be clear, I don't even know if that's true. I just know it's what coaches say all the time. I don't even know if there's ever anybody done the data on it, but that is what coaches say all the time. Well, last year, Purdue was playing with freshman guards, and it's amazing they were as good as they were with freshman guards, particularly like non-McDonald's All-American freshman guards, non-NBA draft pick freshman guards. But they were playing with freshman guards. Well, those guys are sophomores now, and Braden Smith's an All-American level guy now as opposed to a unheralded freshman guard. And then, you know, they go into the transfer portal and they add some defense and some shooting and some athleticism. They're just, not only are they a legitimate championship contender, and that goes without saying, they're a one seed. So it even sounds like a stupid thing to point out and highlight. Like, do you realize Purdue's a champ? Of course, they're a one seed. But like, they were a championship contender last year and they are so much better and better equipped to try to do this. And now they're just two more wins away from their first trip to the Final Four since 1980. Standing in their way, it'll be Gonzaga. And then if they're, you know, if they can win that one, they will play either Tennessee or Creighton in the Elite Eight. So you can cut this a couple of different ways. The narrative that Purdue gets eliminated by mid-majors, like that's basically done now, because you can't, unless a mid-major ends up in the Final Four and they end up in the Final Four and lose, you can't. You're either playing Gonzaga. I mean, you are playing Gonzaga next, and then after that, it's either Tennessee or Creighton. The other side of it is, you know, you got to beat Gonzaga and either Tennessee or Creighton to get where you've been, where everybody knows you got to get to make this story right. You know, to bury last season and, you know, make it clear to the world that that was the most fluky. It was just as fluky as Virginia losing to UMBC. You know, people have said you got to get to the Final Four, and now you've got to beat a Gonzaga team that looks great right now and a Tennessee or Creighton team, both of which have looked great for most of this season. If Purdue gets there, I guess that's what I'm saying, then I'll turn it back to you. They will have earned it.
Yes, agreed. And, you know, I think to larger point on Purdue is obviously last season happened, Fairleigh Dickinson happened, but this has kind of been a theme for Purdue the last few years. Again, super fluky. Anything can happen in the NCAA tournament, but they were a four seed a few years ago, lost to a 13 seed North Texas, lose to St. Peter's 2 years ago. Last year, obviously lose to Fairleigh Dickinson. So right or wrong, I think people judge a team based off of how they perform in the NCAA tournament. You can win 30 plus games in the regular season. You can win your conference. But if you go out early in the NCAA tournament, you lose to a team that you were expected to beat. Again, fair or not, you're going to be judged by it. So it's kind of nice to get that out of the way. Purdue handily defeated Utah State. Moving forward, I think they're in a position where the monkey's kind of a little bit off their back, right? Like they can maybe play a little bit more free, a little bit more confident. And having watched them today, I think they may have already shed that monkey because they've played very confident in this NCAA tournament. Like they're out to prove something. And this Purdue team, I mean, Edie is just dominating in a way that even more dominant than he was during the regular season. They shot it really well from 3-point range today. So they're kind of firing on all cylinders and obviously doing that at just the right time.
Purdue and Gonzaga, if you care, they have played already in this season. It was a 12-point Purdue win 4 months ago. I don't know what it means because it was so long ago, and Gonzaga is so clearly a different team right now than it was 4 months ago. But one thing I remember from the national title game 2021, Gonzaga-Baylor, is, if you remember, Gonzaga and Baylor were supposed to play, I believe, in South Dakota early in that year. And, you know, they got it got canceled because of COVID.
Yep.
And then they end up meeting in the national title game, and Baylor just overwhelmed them. And I remember Mark Few after the game saying something along the lines of, I really wish we would have got to play them like back in November, December, whenever that game was scheduled, because then we would have felt it. We would have known like what happened to us tonight might have happened to us then, but then we would have been adjusted. We'd have felt it. We'd have known what it was going to look like. Because if you remember, like Baylor just jumped on them, and then they kind of played the game even the rest of the way, but Baylor just, you know, you can't play even the rest of the way when you're down 15 just like that. So right. What the point Mark made was we hadn't felt that kind of athleticism, and you know, Davion Mitchell looked like he was mad at us and wanted to fist fight us, and we weren't ready for that. And if we'd have seen it all in December in South Dakota, we'd have been much better prepared just to deal with that right out of the gate. And I wonder if this will serve that same purpose. Like, they're not facing Zach Edey for the first time. They're not dealing with Braden Smith for the first time. They'll have a better idea of what it looks like. How about this? I think Purdue Gonzaga this time will be closer than it was last time. The Zags are playing really well right now, obviously taking advantage of a shorthanded Kansas team. But Purdue Gonzaga, that's going to be a terrific Sweet 16 game. Winner will get the winner of Tennessee Creighton. Let's go to the South region where there were a handful of games today. Duke James Madison was one of them. That falls into the ACC stuff we've already talked about at the top. I will say that I don't think I mentioned this, but Jared McCain had an incredible game. He was 30 points. I think, what was it, 6 of 8 from three?
Yeah, he made his first 6 3-point shots.
Right.
Finished with 30 points and left the game with basically like 11 minutes left. I mean, he was outstanding.
And I saw this from Jared Burson, who invented ESPN Stats and Info and still owns it, far as I'm concerned. He's the first freshman with 30 points and 0 turnovers in an NCAA tournament game since the field expanded to 64 teams in 1985. So a historically great performance for Jared McCain. Elsewhere in the South region, I guess we can do this now. Houston 100, Texas A&M 95 in overtime inside FedEx Forum in Memphis. Anderson Garcia, a 3 at the buzzer to force OT. He'd only made 8 threes all season before this game. Now he finishes the season with 9, but that got pretty dramatic at the end of regulation. Houston took control for the most part in overtime, but I think most of us would agree that was probably if it wasn't a game of the day, it was on the short list.
Absolutely. Fantastic game. This game got wild at the end, obviously. Ends up going to overtime off the Anderson Garcia made 3-pointer at the buzzer. But 4 players from Houston end up fouling out in this game. A very physical game, kind of what you expect from Houston. They are very physical. That's kind of the name of their game. But the way that Texas A&M dealt with Houston, I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, they ended up out-rebounding Houston 49-35. They were not backing down whatsoever. And we don't see many teams kind of attack this Houston team the way that Texas A&M attacked them. Texas A&M ends up losing, but kind of an eye-opening result just because Houston got pushed to the brink in a way that I don't think people expected. And now on tap, Duke versus Houston in the Sweet 16. Finesse and flash versus physicality. It's going to be a great matchup. I'm really looking forward to that. And Duke is playing at a really high level right now. So it's an interesting spot where Houston coming off an overtime game. They're a little bit banged up. Get a Duke team that's a 4 seed in this region, but playing some of its best basketball this season right now.
Yeah, with Houston, listen, I'll pick them to win. But 2 games ago, we watched them lose by 28. Tonight, we watched them give up 95, and I know it was in 45 minutes, but honestly, you could tell me we're going to play 50 minutes against Houston, and I don't know that I'm thinking somebody gets to 95 against them, right? So they're like, something's a little off there, and they've had injury stuff throughout the season as well. And so this will be one of those weird 1 versus 4 matchups where the one seed has been the better team all season long, in the computers, in the human polls, everywhere. But the four seed might be playing better right now. And the four seed quite clearly has, you know, better talent. It doesn't mean it's a better team. Like, Duke's had better talent than just about anybody all season long and hadn't been a better team than Houston at any point in the season. But that's always interesting to me when you get to these types of situations. And it's like, I know this team's better, but the most recent things we've seen, this team looked better and this team has the better players. So we'll see.
Yep. Agreed. Emmanuel Sharp, by the way, 30 points for Houston. He was awesome. Jamal Shedd ends up with 21 points. LJ Cryer with 20 points. But a huge game from Emmanuel Sharp. Unexpected, absolutely needed. They were shorthanded. They had guys who were playing like 2 minutes per game on the season. Ends up playing in this game, shooting free throws late. I mean, Houston was out of guys. If they ended up going to another overtime, they would have been in trouble.
Elsewhere in the South, final score, Marquette 81, Colorado 77. This was a fun game. Tyler Kolek, 21 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds. He is now averaging 19.5 points, 11 assists, and 5.5 rebounds in the NCAA tournament. Cam Jones, my little homie from Memphis, big first half, finished with 18 points on 7 of 13 shooting. I don't know if you saw the postgame interview with Shaka Smart, but he got choked up a little bit. And he talked about just, you know, I love my team and I love these players. And we got Tyler back at just the right time. And perhaps the joy and the tears of joy are all like genuinely just connected to that. But it felt like also a little bit of a sense of relief. This is a guy who is one of the best coaches in America, has been for a while. His head coaching career got off to an amazing start. Like in year two, he goes to the Final Four at VCU. That was 2011. And before he won this game today, he had not gotten out of the second round of the NCAA tournament since he went to the Final Four in 2011. He had made nine. So this is amazing. He had made, I'm just saying this is not to be taken for granted. There's a whole long list of incredible basketball schools that have not been in nine of the past 11 NCAA tournaments, right? But Shaka Smart has, whether it's at VCU, Texas, or Marquette, he even before this tournament had coached in nine of the previous 11. So now it's 10 of 12. But in nine of the previous 11 NCAA tournaments that he was in, it was either first round loss or second round loss. And it must be frustrating, something heavy to carry around with you, when you know you're good at your job, and yet people are out there pushing back on the idea of that, while not focusing on, man, this guy's in just about every NCAA tournament, but instead focusing on, but he doesn't get to the Sweet 16 anymore like he did that one time at VCU. Like, he's been carrying that stuff around for a decade. Why don't you get back there? Why don't you go to the Sweet 16? Oh, he's going to lose in the first round again. And to just have that where, no matter what happens next, nobody will ever, because these are like the bullet points that show up on TV, right? Nobody will ever be able to say again that Shaka Smart hadn't been to the Sweet 16 since 2011. And I do think that that there's some, you know, that's probably something that makes him smile.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is Marquette's first Sweet 16 since 2013. Obviously, Shaka Smart's first Sweet 16 since 2011. And I think he is relieved because he probably felt the pressure of that, of you know, hearing the naysayers saying, hey, you can't make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, even going back just a few weeks ago when Tyler Kolek ends up injuring his oblique, you know, there's questions about, okay, is he going to play the rest of the regular season? He ends up missing several games to end the regular season. He misses the entire Big East tournament. And it's suddenly like, okay, is this guy going to be back? And I think right before the Big East tournament or somewhere around the Big East tournament, he was asked, like, what's his status? And it's like, it's not good. Like, he has an oblique injury and it's not a good time for your best player to be injured, you know? And it's like, I think he felt the pressure of Kolek's injury too, just because, man, it's like, could you really lose your best player at the literal worst time in the season going into the NCAA tournament when you're going to be a number two seed and you have a real chance to make a Final Four run? So yeah, I think some deserved relief for Shaka Smart, monkey off the back for this Marquette program, for this team. they played some really good basketball of late. Kolek's been fantastic.
Well, I had talked to Shaka about this on Selection Sunday, and one of the points I'd made to him, and it's not like I'm making these points that nobody else realizes. I always hate it when it sounds like I'm trying to make some enlightening point, and it's not. It's obvious, but I think it's worth making. My hometown Grizzlies are struggling this year. Yeah. But it's all suspension and injury related. My point being that on opening night next year, like the Grizzlies could go from a team that has the sixth worst record in the NBA to what they were the previous 2 years, which was top two record in the West, two consecutive years, just by getting everybody back and healthy. My point is that in college basketball, you don't get that. Like these are 1 year deals. Like, you know, Tyler Kolek is not on a 5 year max contract. All right. Cam Jones is not on a 5 year contract like Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bain and whatever. You build these college basketball teams. And then if something bad happens, it's not like, that was unfortunate, but wait till next year. We'll make another run at it. If something bad happens, and it doesn't go where it was supposed to go, you usually never get another look at that. Either that player's gone or your other two best players are gone, or it's just you never just get to run it back, or you rarely get to just run it back. And so look at Kansas. That was the preseason number one team. Now, did they ever look like it? No, but that's what they were. And then they lose their best player at the end of the season, and what happened to them? Boom, they get blasted by Gonzaga. Season's over, round of 32. You're exactly right. Like that got really scary for Shaka. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I ain't been at a Sweet 16 since 2011. I had a team good enough to do it last season. We didn't. Now I've got a team good enough to do it. Oh no, Tyler Kolek's hurt. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, here we go again. And he comes back. Kolek's been awesome. They're in the Sweet 16. And next up in the South region, this is the way the games will look. Number one, Houston against number four, Duke. Number two Marquette against number 11 NC State. So check that out. This is the way it works sometimes. Hadn't been at a Sweet 16 since 2011. Now, all you got to do, and it's not all respect to NC State. I don't mean all you got to do, but like anytime you're in the Sweet 16 and you're playing a double digit seed, you should feel good about that. You know, like Iowa State doesn't get to play a double digit seed. North Carolina doesn't get to play a double digit seed. Anytime you're in the lead, Sweet 16, you get to play a double-digit seed. That's an advantageous path. We'll see if Marquette can take advantage of it. Let's go to the West region. We already touched on Clemson beating Baylor. Elsewhere in that region, Alabama 72, Grand Canyon 61. This was interesting from the Crimson Tide. They didn't shoot it like they normally shoot it. Mm-hmm. They didn't score like they normally score. Just 36.9% from the field, 25.8% from three, only 72 points, but they still win by double digits. Grand Canyon, just 2 of 20 from three. Mark Sears, 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. Again, from Jared Burson, who created ESPN Stats and Info with his old hands, bare hands. He built it with his bare hands. He tweeted tonight, Mark Sears is the first player with at least 25 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists in the NCAA tournament since Dwayne Wade in 2003. What'd you make of what Alabama did to Grand Canyon and what Mark Sears did to the Antelopes?
Yeah, good company to keep there. Was really impressed with what I saw from Alabama. They didn't particularly overwhelm this Grand Canyon team. In fact, Grand Canyon kept it fairly close. But Latrell Wrightsell ends up getting a head injury earlier in this game. In the first half, he's ruled out. Sounds like he's probably going to return in the next round, but Sears steps up again. You know, he's coming off a game where he scored 30 points in the first round, has 26 points here. Ryland Griffin was big, 13 points. Didn't shoot it particularly well from three-point range, but did a good job, I think, defensively. And I think that's kind of where you worry about this Alabama team. You know their offense is going to be there. They can score with just about anyone, and they can outscore just about anyone. But defensively, I thought they did a really good job. Ty and Grant Foster ended up with 29 points, but everyone else held to single digits. And Alabama's moving on. This is a really fun team to watch.
Before we get out of here, in the East region, and I should just be transparent, regular listeners, I think, know, I'm in studio. I took my tie off because we've been off air for like 5 hours while another crew's in studio. So I don't look like I'm in studio, but I am. And I got to be back on TV at 1 a.m. Eastern. And, you know, there's production meetings and that kind of stuff. So if it sounds like we are breezing through this stuff a little more quickly than we normally would, or if it feels like we are rushing through it, it's because we are. Those are both true, because we have to. The alternative was to wait literally till 2:45 in the morning and try to do this. And I know that ain't fun for Strong Jaw, because he's just like sitting around waiting on me. It's not fun to talk on TV all night long and then go back to the hotel and talk till 3:30 in the morning. So we felt like this was our best path. We will get back to normal linked episodes very, very soon. We'll be back on CBS Sports Network at 2:00 Eastern on Monday afternoon. So we've got plenty of stuff coming for you. But the reason we're getting through this stuff more quickly than we otherwise would is because we are, you know, actually pressed for time. In the East region, final score, UConn 75, Northwestern 58. UConn shot 81. Jared Burson again. I'm just stealing all his stuff. UConn shot 81.2% from two-point range against Northwestern. It's the highest two-point field goal percentage by any team in any game in NCAA tournament history, according to Jared Burson. So they had all types of historic performances on Sunday. Donovan Klingon, 14 points, 14 rebounds, 8 blocks. So just another overwhelming, impressive performance from UConn. And did you see the postgame interview with Dan Hurley and that Norlander did with Dan Hurley?
No, I missed it. I missed it.
It's hilarious. It's almost like Dan Hurley's trying to do an impression of Dan Hurley. Because Norlander's like, and so what did you, you know, it's just a basic whatever question. And he says, well, we know what the committee was trying to do to us. And it's like, you know, first they put us against either FAU or Northwestern. That's more like a 5 seed. And then, you know, we have Auburn in our region, and that's a top 5 kid. So we know what they were trying to do. We know that they were trying to make this hard for us. It's just, and I want to be clear. I love it. I just love that that's the way his head worked. Cause I do think that kind of stuff, while I think it's cuckoo, I want to be clear. I think it's cuckoo. I don't think the committee was in there going, how do we make this really hard for Dan Hurley? I do think they made it harder than it should have been for Dan Hurley, but I don't think it was intentional. I just think sometimes the committee doesn't know what they're doing. That's how Virginia got into this stupid thing. Cause they don't know what they're doing. When they made it harder for UConn than it should have been, that was just as stupid and unintentional as them letting Virginia in. They didn't do it because they were doing favors for Virginia. They thought they knew what they were doing. They just didn't know what they were doing. I would argue the UConn thing is the path is similar. But Dan was hilarious, and UConn was awesome. And now they will face San Diego State. Mm. Their old pal San Diego State from last April. They'll play them in the Sweet 16 in the other East Region semifinal. You get the second seed Iowa State, the third seed Illinois. So nothing easy for UConn. You know, they don't get to play a double-digit seed to get to the Final Four, to get to the Elite Eight. It's San Diego State, a Mountain West team still alive, and then either Iowa State or Illinois. San Diego State, 85-57 over Yale. I appreciate the – nothing against Yale, but I appreciate the Aztecs, like, you know, taking care of that pretty early so that we could go ahead and start – right around midnight, because otherwise we'd have been in a situation like we were on Thursday night. But UConn, easy win. San Diego State, easy win. And they will now play in the Sweet 16. Both those schools now just 2 more wins away from going to back-to-back Final Fours. Strong Jaw, I'm looking at the clock. I'm already 3 minutes late for a production meeting, so I better get going. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigo, legend. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for watching, listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe. Anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, more of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. And don't forget, we will be back on CBS Sports Network, me and Matt Norlander, 2:00 Eastern, 1:00 Central on Monday afternoon. It'll be the television version of the Eye on College Basketball Podcast.
Yeah.
I can't wait. We'll see you there. Till then, take care.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.